Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. His name's Jazz. He's a dummy op.
We're rolling.
Okay. Are we rolling?
We are rolling. Should I be sure to cut everything out about Jazz?
No. He's a nice kid. All I'm saying is he's worked with Grace.
He's a guy. He's a rec guy.
And they like him. He's a cool dude. He would be a good guy to have involved.
Your daughter has decided not to have anything to do with the radio station.
I don't think radio station is her thing.
It's not in her wheelhouse.
And her friend Chaz, I think, you know, he's like me, man. I was paying for school. He's doing the same thing. He hears that WREK ops can get some side gigs.
Break pay and live sound.
No, not break pay. I mean, WREK pays squat. But you guys ever lease out or rent out or what is it? DJs?
Live
to do
sound, yeah.
Events?
Yeah.
And they get paid okay, right?
I mean, okay, yeah.
I mean, okay, compared to minimum wage.
Maybe, but you're only doing a very short time, so.
Yeah, you're doing an hour or two.
Yeah.
Okay, but he's looking for a way to make money.
I'm being non-committal because I was thinking about money during the whole vacation, and how I don't have any, despite all the money that I make, you know.
You wonder where it goes. I can tell you where it goes.
Where does it go?
We're not getting raises.
No.
And just a little bit of inflation. There are two things that draw on our money. One.
Oh, God. This is stagflation, isn't it? Wages are stagnant and there is inflation. Oh, my God. I took classes on this.
Soon there'll be price freezing and Nixon will come back from the grave. And no. That's your sign of the zombie apocalypse.
We're
Nixon,
screwed.
Nixon comes back. I'm no good in here. No, and then the other thing is we just keep inventing more high-tech crap.
Lyndon Baines Johnson was a good man, but he was misguided.
What was that? Did you say that about who? Lyndon Baines Johnson?
Yeah. I did a very bad Nixon impression, and I said Lyndon Baines Johnson was a good man, but misguided.
Was he misguided?
Excuse me. That was my soda stream.
I like Lyndon Johnson. I think he was a radical dude.
I understand that if you are a military family, you probably don't like LBJ, that you probably have a serious problem.
Wasn't he trying to pull us out of Vietnam? He failed. He failed miserably. Actually, no, I take that back.
Yeah,
there was some expansion of the war. And there was some military action in South America during that time, too.
My understanding from anecdotal evidence and occasionally reading a history book is that Johnson didn't do it right either way. He didn't go all the way and like fight a war that the military folks thought they could win.
That may be a legitimate criticism.
And he did not end the war. Mm-hmm. So he just kind of dragged out. And some people, I keep doing that, some people, because I'm not making a declaration in any way. I am stupid when it comes to the Vietnam War and the things that were going on at the time. But some people blame him for most of those deaths. If he had...
Is that why he did not run again?
Well, I mean, there was
it weighed
that.
Heavily on him.
I think he also just burned all of his political capital with the civil rights movement, you know? He really...
Right, he did sign the Civil Rights Bill. He did bring us what he called the Great Society. He brought us Medicare and Medicaid.
This is the flip side of LBJ is that, yeah, a lot of military folks are very pissed off at how he handled.
But a lot of hippie liberals like me like him.
Maybe there might be some military folks who have mixed feelings because they like the Civil Rights Act too. But, you know, Lyndon Baines Johnson was a big old beagle lifting by the ears Texan who actually did a lot of great stuff for civil rights.
But he was able to get it done by doing the old get you in the back smoke-filled room and strong-arm.
Yeah, he was a complete
asshole.
He was
an experienced politician, and that's what we mean by asshole.
My favorite LBJ quote is, better to have him inside the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in.
He actually said that?
Yeah.
I concur.
And it might have been about...
I concur on all levels.
It might have been about Martin Luther King Jr. All right, well, I feel good about the sound check. I think we can start the show.
All right, go the FCC.
It's good to see you, Pete. It's been a while.
What? It's been a week. You were on vacation?
It's been a week and 5 days.
He says he's eating his
again with the
bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit.
You know what I really missed about you, Pete?
Me making these sounds into the microphone?
Your consummate professionalism. So I haven't seen you since we did the live podcast in the Clough Lounge.
Yes. I have sampled said podcast.
That was a weird experience for me.
And by sampled, I mean like mainlined it into my eyeball.
Did you grind it up?
Right. And injected it, right.
That was a really weird experience for me. I think you were very comfortable because it was like a small comedy show.
Yet I kept moving my distance to the mic and you were adjusting me. So I did come out a little loud. The sound was not perfect.
Sound check was, the sound was bad, not bad quality, but poor levels, and we'll work on that. Right. I mean, it was an experiment.
And some of our lovely audience participants, some were good, some were a little low, but we want to, first of all, a shout out to all six of our audience participants.
Oh, yeah, they were great.
They were great. We got some great comments, some great questions.
And I will say this about the volume levels. Mm-hmm. If I had not been going on vacation the very next day,
you might have adjusted.
I probably would have gone in there and fixed it.
Okay, who's the consummate professional now? But that would have taken a while. That would have taken a while. I understand. Because I have fixed volume levels on my radio show.
You got to go in and find the same thing.
Find every little segment and grab that segment and move it up or down or something like that.
You know, we have the normal number of downloads on the live from the Clough Lounge so far. So,
and that would be what, 3?
I think it's more like 6.
Well, so I liked it. I liked that. And I liked the previous show that we did talking about sort of student issues. I believe the live one and possibly the other one will be required listening for my GT1000 class.
What a segue.
But before we begin talking about the freshman seminar here at Georgia Tech, GT1000, we need to make a shout out to my colleague, good friend, and all-around righteous dude, Dr. Stephen Sherardo. Because Stephen, he listened to part of the podcast.
I am laughing because Pete has an impish grin. Pete, you're terrified that Stephen's going to figure out a way to shut this down.
No, that's not it at all. And I'll address that in a moment. But let me just say that Stephen pointed out that we butchered the crap out of the acronym FACET.
Yes.
Familiarization and adaptation to the surroundings and environs of tech. I think we said it like 9 different ways. Some of them were close. We were close to
you that. You may remember that I never made a guess.
Oh, no. You began the segment with a disclaimer saying, I have no idea what this means.
I bet you all the money in my wallet that you wouldn't be able to do it.
No, and I freely admit it. And we had our audience members got very, very close. It might have been environs at tech or
We actually had a faculty member. We had a ringer in the audience who was able
But we didn't invite him. He just showed up. Mike Smith from the Scheller College of
Business.
I guess
technically a ringer would be someone that we brought in ourselves.
Right. Really good guy. I'm glad he showed up because Mike and I have a lot of things.
Right?
Well, yeah. So I was speaking to his alumni group the following day, I believe.
And he didn't cancel after the podcast.
And he didn't cancel. And no, and Mike is very interested in outreach to students and getting them engaged, and so am I. He's actually going to be on my weekly radio show, Inside the Black Box, on WREK. And
That was a plug.
We have begun, I think, what will be a fruitful collaboration. He's a really cool dude, so I'm glad he showed up. But also, so you mentioned, you're thinking, Stephen's calling the authorities as we speak.
It's just because, and you know, Stephen's great, and I don't think he's going to shut down the show or anything like that. It's just fun to say because he is the associate vice provost for
undergraduate. Or is it assistant vice provost? We don't really know.
Oh, come on. I'll look it up.
Okay. But here's the thing.
But he is the associate or assistant vice provost of undergraduate learning.
Education. He keeps things running.
I need to not type and talk at the same time.
And so what I think I am deathly afraid that Stephen, you know, believes what I do and my cohorts like you is, you know, it's a little too wacky, a little too silly, a little too outside the box to be a serious attempt at educational outreach.
You know, the more I look at the learning outcomes that we need for GT1000 and the stuff that we're trying to do on
campus,
which
we'll talk about shortly,
I'm starting to think that he may be right, that this is ridiculous and that we shouldn't be doing it.
Well, but I think Stephen has the same fear. Whenever I talk to him, he has the fear that myself and many of my colleagues see him as, you know, the rules dictator, like, well, you will do it this way and you will do it this way.
Is that true?
Stephen, I get that impression when you talk to me. And nothing could be further from the truth. We love you, man. You know, he worries about the details and budgets and things like this. And he's very good at his job. And for example, we had GT1000 training, which you did not attend.
Okay, yes,
slacker.
I'm hardcore busted on that. But I actually have a special session with Nirmal coming up.
Ooh,
today.
A special session with Nirmal.
Yeah, so we're going to talk
keep
about
keep the door open, will you? I mean,
oh my god. And he's gonna help me fake it this semester.
Okay, and I think we'll talk a little bit about this today. But the point is, you need diversity. We use the word diversity like a punchline in a joke. Like, well, we have to have diversity, and then they think, well, you're just a crazy liberal, and shouldn't we have the best people there? Well, we should have the best people there. And then the liberals say, well, it's a moral imperative that everyone has equality of opportunity, which it is. But the real reason for diversity is to have a diverse set of skills and a diverse set of viewpoints always makes an effort better. Always. I don't care if that's designing a bridge or optimizing our freshman seminar to academically engage our freshmen, the course we call GT1000. Stephen Girardo, by the way, ran that course for quite a while. And so the point is, Stephen, no one thinks of you that way. Your skill set is highly appreciated. I like to think my skill set is appreciated as well. But we're always going to make fun of the stereotypes. you know, so I'm going to pick on Stephen a little, you know, for being
I'm just going to get fired.
No, for being, you know, a little worried about the rules. And he's going to pick on me, and rightly so, for being not worried enough about the rules sometimes. And between the two of us and the rest of our colleagues, we will create something great. And let me give you an example. The Sky Deli from Delta. Do you remember the Sky Deli?
I don't fly enough to remember the Sky Deli.
So the Sky Deli, they probably ended that maybe 10 years ago. The Sky Deli was the single most brilliant idea that the folks at Delta Airlines ever had. Actually, it was the second most brilliant idea. The most brilliant idea they ever had was their new FAA safety video that they show before we take off. What is Stephen's title? Is it assistant or associate?
It is associate vice provost of undergraduate education.
Yeah, and I just get the impression Stephen thinks we're picking on him a little for being too concerned with the rules. Nothing could be further from the truth. What he does
is
important.
And, you know, I'm sure that this little run that we've been on will assuage all his fears.
Yeah, I hope it will. But the point is, I'll pick on the stereotype, just like he picks on the stereotype. He called me out in the middle of a meeting after he had listened to one of our podcasts. And
should
heard
I
me,
call this one dirty laundry? Is this what this,
this is clean laundry. This is good stuff. And he said, I did the joke. I repeat a lot of jokes.
You do.
Right, I do. I admit that. And I did one of these, yeah, that and 10 bucks will get you a latte at Starbucks. And he called me out in the middle of a meeting going, you do that joke all the time. And I'm like, you're absolutely right, Steve.
And did you tell him, that's not a joke. This is my job.
No, and he should be joking with me about that. And I'll joke with him about some other stuff. And we'll joke with different – Nirmal turns on me like a pack of dingoes on a regular basis. He's always giving me crap.
You should listen to Nirmal when he turns on you.
I should?
Let's take a moment here. Let me just stop you.
Okay.
I do think that this podcast is more for our mental health than it is for anything else.
Sometimes it is, yes.
I mean, just...
I will. The state will so stipulate.
I feel, you know, I feel so calm, you know, on a podcast day. You know, just
right.
getting
it
to
doesn't
kinda
cost us any copay for there's mental no copay health yet treatment,
and there's no shame in the in, you know, in
well,
the,
there's lots
the
of shame,
therapy.
But we'll address that.
I wonder sometimes if this is just a scheduled conversation for us to kind of to grind out a few things. If we are actually seeking answers that are helpful for
in
other
folks.
In
some ways, yes, I agree.
Yeah, yeah, you agree with the first part, but mm-hmm. Does this help anyone? I wonder if anybody, like, say we've been talking about Stephen and Nirmal a lot, right?
Right.
Do they hear the stuff on the podcast? They're responding to us as people, like, hey, that was a good job you did, right, or you make the same jokes, or, you know, stop making fun of me, I guess, would be one thing that someone could say. But are we actually...
But I'm basically saying I value Stephen and his contribution.
I think the office of the Vice Provost of Undergraduate Education is awesome. And I've only just recently become the liaison to that office.
Right.
And I've learned a lot about who's in it and what they do. And I'm really excited about
I am
finding
too
out more and working with them. That said, I have no idea if this is even remotely helpful to the mission of the office.
Well, I think
Vice
we'll address
Provost
that when we talk about lesson plans for GT1000. But back to my story about the Sky Deli. For those of you not familiar with it, the Sky Deli was a bag lunch that Delta would prepare for you. This is back before 9/11 when they actually gave you food.
What happened? What was before 9/11?
Well, before 9/11, you got food on an airplane.
Was there anything before 9/11, Pete? I don't remember.
There was food on your airplane, on your airline flight. And what's interesting is you could either wait for them to bring you the little plastic wrap sandwich and that mutant genetically modified banana that was really small. Do you remember those?
I hate bananas. Did you know this about me?
I did not know that. I love bananas.
I hate bananas. And it was never an issue until I had a child.
So you were attacked by a banana.
And bananas are awesome for the kids.
Yeah, the little baby food banana thing.
Just a banana.
Oh, yeah, just a banana.
You can take a banana. It's a completely portable food.
It's food and a plaything at once.
The kid loves it.
They'll smash it up their nose.
Potassium, everything,
yeah,
right?
It's good stuff.
So I have banana on me at least 3 times a week.
And you're like, ew.
Ew. Ew. I feed my kid banana, and it's on my fingers. This is therapy for you. I almost lick my fingers because I've got, there's food on. Oh, it's banana. Yeah. It's just so disappointing and horrible all the time.
It doesn't take much to set you up. But in any case.
That's my purpose here.
You know, if you sat down in your airline seat, you had to wait for the nice flight attendants in the cart to bring you your little tray of stuff. And it wasn't fancy food, but if you were starving, you got something to eat.
But also, it was a good distraction while you were in a tin can going the speed of sound in the sky.
That's always a good point. But what they did is they had this big bin with a little, it had a nice little white bag with little handles, and it said, Fly Delta. And you had, your little cookie and
how did they get that tone of voice across on the Fly Delta?
Your little Fly Delta. Here's your little cookie. I don't know.
But in any case, was it big blocklers? Fly Delta. Or was it kind of an arc? Fly Delta.
You're just jerking me around.
Or just, was it cursive?
But if you think about it, if you flew a lot, you really liked the Sky Deli because you got it at the beginning. If you were starving, you could eat it right then.
Or you could
eat it whenever you wanted. Or if you weren't hungry, it was in a bag. You could put it in your briefcase and take it with you.
I don't understand.
And have a little sandwich and a cookie.
Where's the Sky Deli? Is it a bag you pick up as you walk
into the plane? Yeah, as you walk on the plane. I mean, it was a brilliant idea.
In the bridge or in the actual plane?
In the jetway. So just before you got on the plane.
The jetway. That's the thing you walk down and the movies always stop and watch the person.
Yeah, and if you were on one of those flights where you had to walk up the stairs, well, I think you were just out of luck. You're like, sorry.
Someone's throwing bags up into the air.
But the point is, they discontinued the Sky Deli, I think, because of abusive clowns like me. We were making fun of it. I mean, it's like, really? This is what I'm getting at bag lunch before?
Do you think it was a marketing... A marketing tragedy.
Sky Deli was the most brilliant idea that we love to make fun of, right? And that's I'm sorry, are you just justifying
your general attitude again?
No, I'm not. I'm saying the Sky Deli was brilliant. If I could have written Delta a letter, I would have said, "Dear Delta, we were only kidding. Bring back the Sky Deli." No, and I will say this but I am this way as well. So, for FACET, which we now clarified what that acronym means.
Why don't you say it again?
Familiarization and adaptation to the surroundings and environs of tech. So, what's the difference between words like environs?
What's the difference between surroundings and environs?
Not much. But most people would say environment, not environs. These are people that say gadzooks or something.
I love to say gadzooks. Did you know this?
No. That and bananas. Let me make a note.
You know why I like gadzooks?
Why?
Because that was the name of the thing in Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Oh, really?
The Great Gadzooks.
Do you like to wear a cape and run around the grocery store too?
I mean, yes, but I don't see why that's relevant.
Who doesn't? But the point is... You do what you do, and what you do could be very important and very valuable, but you're a particular flavor of what you do. My flavor is outside the box. People make fun of me for that, and we did a FACET breakfast where we answer questions for the parents.
Do you ever fear that you are just right there in the box, Pete, and just trying to be outside the box?
No, I fear I've gone so far outside of the box, I'm hanging off the cliff. And I get criticized for that. And sometimes it's a valid criticism.
I fear sometimes that I'm I'm deeply in the box.
You're not, because you gave me a book called Teaching as a...
Subversive.
Activity.
Yes.
So...
Yeah, but that was back in the... Oh, callback. That was back in the Vietnam War era.
Yeah.
When that book was published. So, the subversive activity at the time was to question authority.
Yeah.
Questioning authority now is... what they do on reality television.
So what you're saying is questioning authority is real. I question authority on a regular basis. I think we all should.
I don't see how you got there from what I said, but I'm going to go with it. Yes, questioning authority is just a part of the toolbox of being a TV consumer in America.
Okay.
Yes, to be a human.
Yet we're not questioning this whole NSA spying thing very much, are we?
Well, I mean, people are certainly mentioning it.
That has me concerned.
The NSA spying?
All right, but that's a whole another thing.
Is that another ball of wax, Pete?
I don't understand that. What is that a metaphor? A ball of wax? What is that? Meaning another issue, another topic?
You should just get it all out, and then I'll cut it out.
Okay. No, I just...
I promise.
Allow me my mucus-clearing interludes. But the other day, we were at this Facet breakfast. We were answering questions. And I was answering a question for my good friend Enid Steinbart, who's on the mathematics faculty, who just got there a little late. Normally, this is her question. She would answer this about calculus 1 and 2. And should I, you know, take my credit and not take calculus 1? Should I take calculus 2? And I tried to give reasonable advice. And I said, for those of you thinking about, opting out of calculus 2, we're a little bit different here. We not only do most of the integral calculus that people think of as your second semester calculus, we do a lot of linear algebra. And this is very important. For those of you that don't remember linear algebra is one of the ways that eHarmony.com uses to match you with your perfect mate, which is true. They use something called principal component analysis. I thought it was a funny joke. People laughed. It got exactly the response I wanted.
But it's true.
It's true. And because I like to lighten things up. I like to lighten things up. That's what we do with this podcast. We're a little bit light. And then Dan Morrison from, he's from housing, but he's actually from Residence Life. Mm-hmm. Right? These are the people that are responsible for you coming as a freshman and beyond, and finding a community so you don't become withdrawn, lock yourself in your room and become addicted to Halo 4 and not do it.
Which Halo are we actually on?
I think we're on Halo 4. There was Halo Reach before that, Halo 3. There may be a new Halo. Or it could be League of Legends, World of Warcraft, all these weird things. So I just picked one.
I bet you Bioshock is one, too.
Yeah, there's some really good ones out there. But Dan Morrison gets up, and I referred to his program with another question about
Call of Duty 5.
Yeah. What are you just naming video games to which my son, as we speak, is addicted? I talked about GT1000, and mm-hmm. I said GT1000, and actually Nirmal put it best the other day. He says the freshman experience helps you live at Georgia Tech. GT1000 helps you learn at Georgia Tech. And I explained how they're complementary. And then Dan got a subsequent question, and he referred back to me, and I said, one thing we've learned about Pete is never give him a microphone. Which got a huge laugh. I thought it was hilarious. But what it does, what that does, what this podcast does, what our last few podcasts do, is illustrate to the students that, in fact, faculty here at Georgia Tech are human and not alien spawn. They really think we're alien spawn, that they can't talk to us.
Tell me what you think alien spawn means in terms of this joke.
That we're simply unapproachable. We're like we're a different species. They can't come up to us and say, you know, I was sitting in a lecture and you talked about, solving systems of linear equations and the relevance of the determinant on that. And you said when it's zero, that means you can't solve it. Why is that? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They won't do that at office hours. They won't do it after class. My students will, because I've been teaching juniors and seniors recently. They're very good at that. Freshmen will not do that. And speaking of lesson plans for GT1000, that is going to be the lesson plan for my first class in GT1000. It's going to be your instructor, human or alien spawn. It really is. And the question is, how do you teach that?
I am actually going to structure my GT1000 around interviews mm-hmm. and sort of podcast creation. Mm-hmm. You know, like okay. Their final project is going to be, the final project is going to be something along the lines of a short radio program.
Wow, that's a great idea.
And so the build up to that is first.
I may be stealing that, actually.
Please do. The first assignment will be they interview each other in class and then present Mm-hmm. You know, they introduce, you know, let's go around the class and introduce ourselves. They'll actually be interviewing each other.
That is great.
To make sure they get that across, to make sure they can get themselves across, and also to see if they can listen to someone, right?
Right.
And then the reflection on that will be, how right did that person get you? What did you leave out?
Yeah.
What did, you know, what did they ask about that you were surprised, you know, stuff like that.
And for me, that's important because I have one of the biggest classes, so I can't actually let people do a live presentation of all these things, but I can put them all up on the web and let the team leaders listen to them, let the students listen.
So that's great. They interview each other, and then I'm going to ask them to, and I don't know the order of this yet, because there's going to be some scaffolding going on, and scaffolding.
Ooh, scaffolding, big word.
Yeah. Do you want to tell the listeners what scaffolding is in this case?
Scaffolding is the same thing in an educational environment that it is when you build a building.
It is a metaphor in an academic environment.
Yeah. It's, you know, you have this scaffold around a building that supports the building and the construction until it's ready to go out on its own. And that's what scaffolding
is. Until the building's ready to hit the high seas and travel into the world.
Yeah, I guess
so. They'll interview a faculty member. They'll interview a campus support staff member, whoever that might be.
Wow, this is a good idea.
And they'll interview someone in their expected career. You know, so that's three out of the class interviews.
And the one in your expected career is a common element for GT1000. That's, people use that as part of their career project.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you want to do?
Yeah. So I want them. You know, I figure the buildup. It'll be simple. To get another student in the class. We're all right there, and so you have to do it. And that's sort of the first hump. You just got to get over that and talk to a person. The faculty member, and this is where the team leaders come in. Oh, GT1000 team leaders. So each GT1000 class has a number of upperclassmen, three or four, who are team leaders, who are resources, who are these sort of Sherpas for the freshmen.
Sherpas.
Yeah, you know, they've been to the top of the mountain and they're showing the person how to get up there.
And they're all volunteers, basically.
Yeah.
So if you're a team leader listening to this, thank you.
Thank you
Not
very
everyone
much.
May be appreciate the job you do, but we here at Consilience with Pete and Charlie and in the Center for Academic Enrichment, on behalf of Dr. Nirmal Trivedi and all the folks there, to appreciate what you're doing.
You know, Nirmal now oversees the GT1000 class, but looking at the history, it turns out that 1986, Bill Osher, who was in the Counseling Center, he started GT1000. It was Psych 1010 at the time.
Yes.
I took Psych 1010 from Bill Osher in 1991.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was Psych 1010?
It was pretty good. It was a long time ago, so I don't have any clear memories of, you know... I was not a good student, Pete. I was not a good student in any way.
And I think we're evolving, and I need to, for the record, I apologize to John Stein, the Dean of Students, yesterday at Facet.
Why?
I'll apologize to him as well.
This is all apologies from you. If Taco Bell, Stephen, John Stein.
I will say, so John Stein, I think, basically took it over from Osher. And changed it from Psych 1010. They wanted to get it out from underneath
the Counseling Center
and psychology. So
is this politics?
No. I think it makes sense. I don't think it's politics. Yeah. I think psychology was involved in it because they thought, well, this is what we're doing. And then we made it a little less, more psychology oriented, a little more academic oriented. And I believe John Stein was the next guy to take it over. And at each stage, everybody added, improved, it evolved, it's getting better and better and better. Then Stephen Gerardo took it over, and now Nirmal Trivedi's taking it over. And I think it's getting better at every stage. I still think there are things we can improve. I'm happy to say that there are elements of my own GT1000 course last semester that are lame. How do I know this? Because my current...
Because they told you so.
One of my co-team leaders walked out to me and said, it's lame. I think that was the exact word he used. And I'm like, okay... You just opened your pie hole. Now you get involved. And so they're helping with some very simple things. One of them is don't let any faculty or staff lecture for 50 minutes. Just don't let it happen.
We're back to team leaders now. This is one of the things that they will help is break up the class.
Yeah, do a 10 or 15 minute lecture at the most about a topic and then spin it off into a panel discussion with your team leaders so they can give the students' perspective on, say, co-oping or international education or whatever it is. And that's what they suggested, and that's exactly what our team leader advisory board, T-Lab, said to our folks when we were doing that.
I'm thinking about doing think, pair, share exercises, but the share is not to the whole class. It's to
the small group.
Yeah, to the team leader.
Yeah, and so that's an example of active learning, which is good.
Think, pair, share is you ask the student to think for a certain amount of time, a short amount of time, about a concept.
Then you pair up.
Then you pair them up and have them discuss that, and then you share. That team of two or whatever shares to, because think pair share could be think trio share or think quad share. And then they share to the class the summation of their discussion. Where in this case, what it will do is think pair share and then the think and the pair, actually the think will be on their own. The pair will actually be team leader group. That's what they'll do. Yeah. So think team share. Yeah. And then
there are many variations of this, all of which are
That's what I want to do.
Right. Think. And the point is, it's a very good thing. It's not just, okay, you listen, here's some facts, one, two, three. You will organically discover these facts. You might actually discover some facts or observations or thoughts that you hadn't anticipated. But you'll remember them because you developed and honed them and things like that.
This is
a
seminar
better
class.
Way to learn. Although people make fun of Think, Pair, Share.
And, you know, someone...
Because it sounds a little squirrely.
And also, I relied on it very heavily when I was... I ran a few sessions of a course. I was an assistant instructor.
A lackey? A minion?
I was a minion, yes. I had one eye and I was yellow. that's right. Is that right? Are those the minions
from the movie
in Despicable
with Steve Carell? Yeah.
Okay.
They are. They look like little Tylenol.
I haven't seen that yet, but there's a lot of talk about it, and my wife wants to see Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2, and I'm starting to realize that there's a whole world of children's movies headed my way.
Yes.
So I was a minion and I ran these sessions and I relied very heavily on think, pair, share exercises and these sort of reflection pages I would give out where at the top it would say, before class begins, write down a few thoughts about this thing. And then I would have, you know, whatever the concept was. And then I would have in the middle, use this space to take notes on what your classmates say, things that surprise you. And then I would have the reflection at the end. You know, what are a few things that you thought of during discussion that you didn't think before? And, and then I used Think, Pair, Share, and then one of my fellow instructors said, you love that, don't you? Which is a statement of fact that sounds so demeaning. It almost embarrassed me enough not to use it, but I've decided, screw it.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Charlie Bennett, Educator of the Year. Screw it. Well, that's the problem. You know what that is? I don't think it's politics. I think it's marketing. So think, pair, share, if you think about it from a pedagogical view, is useful. But my colleague, Wendy Neustetter, would say that she's a big fan of problem-based learning. And the problem is what focuses you on something. So you need some focus, like a problem. Just plain old activities aren't always that good unless there's a focus. And you had a focus. Your focus was to discover these thoughts on, say, faculty-student interaction. And then the funny thing about faculty-student interaction is everyone has many of the same views. They're just terrified of asking a question in class.
In the podcast that we did live in the Clough Lounge, I was very surprised at how the students describe their fear of speaking up in class or asking questions in class.
Right.
And I don't know if I just don't remember. I mean, it's been a long time. You know, but maybe it's just ideological. You know, you don't even really know that you're avoiding doing that until you do some reflection and really think about it.
And that's another one, reflection. We ask you a lot. And this is in the instructor's guide to course facilitation.
There will totally be some journal entries in my class where they reflect on certain things.
So reflective writing, where we write down things And people just think it's squirrely, and it's a very inefficient way to learn. When, in fact, what you should do is just do a lecture and give people as many examples and as many facts as they can and, like, turn the fire hose on. People can't drink from a fire hose. So a little bit of these active learning techniques.
Yes, they can. They just end up with no teeth after.
Okay. I will so stipulate.
When I was looking through the guide to facilitating, you know, I kept thinking about yes, it's a seminar class. Use that as sort of, you know, that's the flag. Seminar class, right? And then also looking at all of the suggested topics.
Right.
Right. You've got the book there.
I do.
You know, leadership development is one,
yeah,
and academic
management,
success,
right,
and time management. I was thinking, it's nice that I don't have to give a 50-minute lecture on time management. Because, one, I don't know how to do that.
I'm not particularly good at that myself.
I do not know how to manage my time, nor do I know how to lecture for 50 minutes straight.
Right, on time management.
Two, there's no way that that would be useful. That, you know, I could say, all right, I read a couple books over the weekend, and I'm now going to explain to you some time management skills. And at the end, we'll have a quiz to make sure that you've learned everything, a quiz with some fill-in-the-blank questions.
That's ridiculous.
It is terrible to procrastinate when you are trying to what? Accomplish a goal. Very good.
Okay. So you're going to have the fill-in-the-blank things. Which is what we use in second grade, but it's
it can actually be
helpful.
I'm just making fun of the... if I got in front of a class and talked for 50 minutes, by the end of it, I would be talking about the Melvins, you know?
The Melvins? What is this, a British rock group? Or?
It is not British. It is California and Washington State.
Oh, okay. I would be talking about that. The way I do time management is just keep a couple extra Red Bulls in my in my drawer. Well, I was up till 4 last night working on this crap because I'm a bad time manager. Let's chug a Red Bull and go to class.
It's like the nitrous can under the seat in the car in Road Warrior, you know, when the... Pete.
No, I remember.
Yes.
He had a nitrous injected vehicle.
Lord Humongous reaches down and unscrews his nitrous can. And
yeah. So what do you plan on doing for time management?
Well, there's readings in the textbook.
There are.
And so...
And I learned something useful from our own Stephen Girardo on that. and you know, when I go to seminars and I go to technical talks, if I learn one or two useful ideas out of I think this is maybe an hour session or something, to me that's useful.
That's what I keep coming back to. The radio show that I do, this is my turn to plug. You ready?
Hit it.
The radio show I do, Lost in the Stacks, the one and only Research Library Rock and Roll radio show.
I thought it was the first and only. Did you change that description?
You know, yeah, because the one and only, it sounds, you know, we can...
It's all about the marketing. It's about the marketing, right. So when we say reflective learning and reflective writing, it sounds cheesy. If we had a better name for it, if my colleague Shannon Dombrowski over in the Center for Academic Success had a better name for tutoring, they would be kicking ass.
Maybe we could do something that's just so over...
People just don't like tutoring. Tutoring is important.
It's time for your inside think activity.
But that's what you need. Okay, I'm going to quote Nobel laureate Harry Kroto right here, who shared the Nobel Prize for the discovery of the C60 carbon phase. He supposedly was the person that gave it the name Buckminster Fullerene. It doesn't get any cooler than that.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. So we just need some cooler names for this.
Is there Einsteinium?
Because
that would be cooler.
Yeah, but I believe that's an element in the periodic table.
But someone had to give it that name.
There's berkelium and there's lawrencium after Lawrence, the physicist.
In the 10 to 12 minutes we have left.
Yes.
You hit on something very important. What am I going to do for the time management session?
Yeah.
I have ideas about how to do, you know, I think I know communication. Right, because you know, I'm pushing for them to talk to people and then be able to summarize and not project. Oh my God, and communicate back what they learn.
Right, one of the things they could learn from their team leader or someone in their field is how do you approach time management? What are your effective? What do they call those best practices?
I don't have any background in time management. This is the thing. I don't know how to manage time. Time to me is a great big bear. with big claws and sharp teeth, who's not hungry. So if I go and talk to him, he's just going to bat me around a little bit, you know, kind of
you'll play dead.
Bump up against me.
You'll run faster than the guy with you.
Smell, see if I've got chocolate, discover I don't. Thank God I don't like chocolate. Look and see if I have a banana. No banana. Bears need potassium.
But I don't think they like bananas,
any
though.
Minute, this bear is going to realize that he's hungry and eat my face. That's how I feel about time. There's no management. There's just getting it at the right moment of the day.
Okay.
So I need to learn time management, or I need to do some kind of, okay, confession time, folks, right? Yeah. Not folks listening, but the class. I am a terrible time manager. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, I could do this, I could say, let's talk about how I screw up my day.
Right.
You know,
and learn from Charlie.
And then
I'm the same way.
You all come up with some strategies to make it so that I'm a better time manager.
So one of the things, so I think what I'm going to do for that session is I'm going to do a little bit of discussion in the beginning of, you know, bad habits in time management, and then let the team leaders do that. And I have a lot of bad habits in time management, one of which is one that's not directly related to time management. And that is I say yes to too many things. You do that, too.
Hey. Right? I resemble that remark.
No, and some students do that as well. They get too tied up in other things, and you just have to learn to say no. And then we'll do the second two-thirds of the class with the team leaders and I and other students just sharing good habits in time management.
Can I have your notes for class?
Yeah, you can. My notes will fit on a half a page. And, you know, sometimes it's just literally making that list.
Yeah.
And part of GT1000 is you're not going to fix their ability to make the perfect resume or to have the perfect time management or perfect study skills. But if you get them thinking about it, if you succeed in getting them thinking about the way they learn and the fact that adapting their learning style to fit that, that's successful.
Is this the metacognition or is this something else?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think the name of it. That, you know, learning that uses metacognition, right? And cognition is really the way you sample stuff, you learn stuff, you take things into your brain. Metacognition is the cognition about the way you engage in cognition.
So think about how you think.
So it's the way you learn. Think about the way
you
think.
Yeah.
Think about the way you learn.
So that might be the time management stuff.
It's related to time management.
But I'm saying that my class on time management in the course GT1000 might be more of a meta course. I'm like, okay, so time management is not a natural skill. Time management is not a list. It's not...
It's a lot of different things to a lot of different people in a lot of different contexts.
It's a system that you can build, and it's a set of goals that you... So I obviously have to do a little bit of reading and research. Do you have a good time management book, Pete? I feel like I'm drowning.
No,
here.
I think most time management books are like diet books. They suck.
That'll be the first thing I say in class.
No, but think about diet books. Don't eat so much. Stop putting so much high calorie stuff in your pie hole. I mean, you know, I could write that down in 1 3.5 by 5 note card.
And from what I understand, that actually doesn't work for a lot of people.
Right. So the point is you need to explore the way you manage your time, use your time, the way you study. If you get the student thinking about it their freshman year, this is not something you're going to fix and say, here's the plan.
Right.
Do this.
But if they know it's a subject that they can wrestle with during college.
Right. So you think about how do you plan your day? So
how do you plan your day?
My day is all on my cell phone. If it's not on my cell phone, it doesn't exist. And I have a problem with my cell phone. My calendar's not getting updated. I think I have to reprogram something. And I am at a loss.
Yeah, you're sort of freaking out about that. I remember you were talking about that before my vacation.
So I think I know what I need to do to fix that. I'm going to fix it. If it's all there, you could just pick it up there and it reminds you.
Let me show
it's
what
good.
You do. So you take,
and a lot of students do that.
Take
now.
Your phone like this. You hold it up. It's about 5 feet above the ground, right?
Uh-huh.
And
drop
then,
it.
And then you just like that. And that'll fix your phone for you.
Well, what's interesting is we all go through time management phases, and my colleague Paul Cole used to make fun of me, and I was deserving of it too. This is back when I was in the PDA phase, the personal digital assistant, before
you
your phone and your PDA
were
combined.
Did you have a BlackBerry?
I had a BlackBerry for a while, but I think this one
Is BlackBerry a phone?
It's a phone, yeah.
You had a Palm Pilot?
I had a Palm Pilot. So I had a Palm Pilot, and I had a meeting with my colleague Paul Cole.
I haven't thought about Palm Pilots in forever.
And we would be trying to schedule a meeting with a student, a colleague, an industrial collaborator. And I'd go, well, okay, let's see if we can schedule that. I'd pull out my Palm Pilot and I'd pull the little...
spin the little stylus
the stylus, and I'd be poking around and, you know, would
trying
take a
to write
to boot
in
up.
Fake writing like you were yeah. an avatar. So
you think, and Paul would just look at me and go, let me get my PDA. And he'd pull out a little paper notebook
yeah, exactly.
out of his paper and he'd make fun of me every time. And his was much more efficient.
Yeah, there's a guy named Merlin Mann, that's his real name, who does productivity. He's one of those people who makes his living off of talks.
Okay.
And he has a hipster PDA. That's a thing that's like one of his...
Hipster PDA. Yeah. What is a hipster PDA?
It is a stack of index cards about half an inch thick, held together by a binder clip.
Okay, cool.
And a space pen.
So we can write upside down?
If need be, yeah.
So the point is, Paul Cole's organization system was this paper notebook. This guy's hipster PDA was index cards.
Yeah.
A lot of students like to use the phone, but if you don't use the phone, use a plan. Do something. Remember Filofaxes?
Mm-hmm.
Remember those things?
My problem was
always... Find something that works for you.
I was trying to use a method as opposed to a mission to manage my time.
Right, but you need a method, and a lot of times people need a device to store
it. You got to start with a mission, though. Like, what are you trying to keep track of?
Yeah.
You know, because I was starting from the to-do list.
I have a to-do list on my phone.
But the to-do list is an important tool, but that's not the be-all, end-all.
Right.
You know, like, oh, it's on my to-do list, so now I've mastered what I need to do. I've done all the planning.
Yeah.
Is not correct.
Yeah, things fall off my to-do list.
What am I trying to accomplish? You know, I've got my list of things that... Well, maybe this is the time management class, isn't it?
The point is, everyone. So this is what we're going to do for time management. We will organically discuss, you know, our shortcomings, our views on what works, what doesn't work. The TLs. Do you have your TLs assigned yet?
Yeah, and I have to meet them this week or next week. I have the
TLs are a great resource.
I'm going to use the Hugh Crawford method. Hugh Crawford, one of the best professors we've got at Tech.
As opposed to Hugh, is it Hume Cronin?
Hume Cronin, one of the best actors in America, might be dead, and I apologize if he is.
I think so. Fine actor, though.
You know, I don't apologize.
Fan.
He was awesome, and now he's gone.
But he lived to be like 120 or something.
All those people in Cocoon actually acted like they had been in cocoons, you know?
Yeah,
they
exactly.
all lived very long lives. What were we talking about? Oh, Hugh Crawford. Legal pad, 7 points. Yeah. Start this discussion. If the students bring up the points, you cross them off. If there's a lull, you go to the point you haven't crossed off and toss
it in.
Yes. That I will do for time management.
Okay. I think that's...
I'm going to manage some time right now, Pete.
Yes.
I have a class session that I want to do for plagiarism, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of, if not personal, it's just more in
You're
my...
You're a library guy. It's important to you.
It's more in my professional wheelhouse. And certainly other GT1000 instructors are going to say, don't plagiarize. This is what plagiarism is. But I want to do a whole course, a whole class session.
That sounds like an excellent class. I have a great slide for you.
Oh, yeah?
That I will send to you from George Hazelrig, program director at the National Science Foundation, on academic plagiarism of grants.
Ah, I like
and
that.
So these are from people that were basically being indicted for plagiarizing, not a paper, which is bad enough, but plagiarizing a grant proposal. And then as soon as that check gets sent, mm-hmm. that's a felony. I mean, these people are on their way to jail. And some of the excuses were worse than what you'd get out of a seventh grader. So it's hilarious. You should share it.
I want that slide. Yeah. So, yeah, plagiarism, and we'll talk about...
But you're going to talk about more subtle things, not like copying an entire chunks of things out of reference material.
I want to use the plagiarism discussion to then get into what is research. So as opposed to, I read that this is what people think, and so here's what people think, but like research in the sense of... this is, a lit review, and then this is what I think, and this is what I used to support that thought. You know, that sort of how instead of simply writing down what someone else did, even paraphrased or even cited, like it'll start with plagiarism and then end with what is research, what is new research. Yeah.
But this is a real problem, and it's a problem I discovered with some of my graduate students once. And you discovered in industry as well. You work together with people, And you're writing lots of reports. Some of them are internal, some of them are external. Some of them turn into copy that's used in brochures or external memos to explain, here's the technical details of our product, here's what's good, here's what's bad, here's how you should use it. And what you do is you have all these paragraphs floating around all over the place. And you mix and match. And you call up your colleague from the other side of the cubicle and say, look, give me some boilerplate on this. I know we wrote something. And he sends you that thing, and you take it.
And you slap it into a Word document.
Yeah, sometimes you adapt it, but a lot of it's there. And then you add your thing. And these are collaborators. They're going back and forth. And then, and this happens in grants. When you write a grant, you're like, look, remember that grant we wrote 2 years ago? I want to do something similar. Give me some boilerplate on this. And that ends up in a grant. And then you're writing back and forth papers with your student, and you're writing up abstracts to be submitted to conferences. And some of a sentence or two ends up here, there, and the other place.
Yeah, we're going to talk about.
And then, boom, it's in his thesis. And your collaborator is like, well, that's my sentence. I'm like, well, remember you sent me this? This actually happened. And there was no malicious intent. But I think you can end up with a few sentences here and there in a PhD thesis.
We're going to talk about Stephen Ambrose's books, the guy who wrote Band of Brothers, like one of his last books.
Band of Brothers.
Yeah. One of Stephen Ambrose's last books, which was created by a research team and himself,
right?
I think had a serious plagiarism problem.
Okay.
Like repeated passages that were lifted word for word from other books.
Right, but when that happens
because of the research process.
My student and me, we're collaborative. I don't really worry about that. And then when it happened with a colleague of mine who gave me this stuff because he and I were co-writing a proposal and one sentence ended up in the introduction to a thing. You're right. That's not correct. But I shared him. I said, look, remember that sentence you gave me here? It just ended up, you're right. We should change that. That's a legitimate concern. But there was, he didn't go read his proposal online somewhere and grab it. It was
right.
And how do you deal with that? That's a very subtle thing. It's plagiarism nonetheless, but it's.
And that's the idea of doing a whole class session on plagiarism is to talk about.
I should come. I would like to come to this.
It's not really playing by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing the right thing.
Right.
That's what the discussion
will you talk
will be.
About the fact that there are programs out there to search for plagiarism and many universities use them?
I might try and find a guest speaker who can say, here are the ways that we will take you to the college pokey if you plagiarize.
So we do that for lab reports. We have a database.
Yeah, it feeds
everything.
In.
And we don't do this giant NSA cross-correlation
callback
thing. But what we do is if we see something that just looks so astute, cogent, and erudite that a student who's barely hanging out would never write a sentence or two like that. If you use the word environs in your lab report,
nice.
I'm just going to take environs and I'm just going to look. And I could do a quick search out of this giant, database and just go, oh, yeah, it showed up in these. And oh, yeah, it's nothing like that. Or, yeah, oh, that whole paragraph's the same.
Yeah.
Then we're going to bust you. We're not perfect at catching you either, so.
This is not very organic, but we got to bring this in.
Yeah.
I made.
So you have lots of cool ideas for your G2000.
I do. What I need to do is I need to talk to, I'm going to talk to Nirmal about structuring them.
Yeah.
Right? And then try and do a, syllabus creation is hard, man.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I tried to get some stuff down and I crashed and burned.
Uh-huh.
So I will be discussing it again with him today and then going into some serious draft mode because it's coming up fast.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Less than 2 weeks.
Whoa. Although I have a little bit of leeway because my class is on Thursday.
Yeah, mine's on Wednesday. Okay.
Are you doing 12 to 1?
No, I'm doing 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
Gotcha. I'm doing 3 to 4 on Thursdays.
Okay, so then I could come to your plagiarism.
Please do.
If you want.
Yeah.
What is your first class going to be?
Hey, everybody.
Mine is literally going to be on faculty-student interaction.
No, my first is going to be the introduction interview.
Oh, okay.
Meeting everybody.
So let me ask you a question about the logistics. So multimedia is something that the millennial generation likes.
Yes.
So I have had for my career projects, I've had them do posters like those sarcastic successories posters.
Right. I've decided that.
I've had them do videos.
I've decided that to make it easy on me and also to not not go down any rabbit holes
yeah.
of, okay, well, yeah, you do this and you do that, like giving each student a different kind of project. Yeah. I'm going to say we're taking this
no,
down.
No, it can be the same.
Well, yeah, yeah, but I'm saying we're going to take this assignment down to bare bones. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is presenting me with an audio project, audio only. Mm.
But I like audio.
Yeah, and I'm going to...
How are you going to record it?
Well, question. We have voice recorders at the library. And your phone records, and, you know.
Do most phones have an app that you could just click it and record?
I guess I will look that up before.
Yeah, see, I'm going to look that up.
But, yeah,
because in the old
do.
Days, they used to have to check video cameras out of the library, but yeah. now everyone has a video camera.
And you got you can
thing.
Do voice memos on your phone and yeah. and all kinds of stuff.
But I'll double check that. I will actually make recommendations for the iPhone and for Droids and for similar phones.
Voice yeah. memo right there. Okay. So,
and how long are you going to make it? Like 2 minutes? 5 minutes?
That's a very good question.
Yeah. Short's good.
If I'm going to try and get them to summarize their projects, mm-hmm. you know, if it's individual student assignments, mm-hmm. then yeah, like a 4 minute, you know,
right.
use as a model the interstitial stuff that happens on public radio.
Right.
Although
right.
what I might do is say your final project is a collaborative group project. You should have two producers, two editors, and two hosts.
Oh, nice. And they could edit it on Audacity.
Exactly.
Which is free.
And what I need them to do then is a podcast that summarizes the themes of the interviews that the whole group has done.
This is great.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I haven't done audio. Last year we did video because my TLs like wanted us to do video. I'm digging the audio thing, man.
So I'm going to tell them that they can do, they don't have to worry about copyright. You know, here is what you would have to worry about if we were doing these public. Mm-hmm. But if you want to use your favorite song, you mm-hmm. know, and clips from a movie, that's fine. I'm listening to this to grade it. If you do something that is in FCC compliance mm-hmm. and copyright compliance, then maybe I'll play it on the show.
Cool. Cool.
So that's the plan.
I love that. And were you drinking beer when you came up with that? Or were you out
I was
running?
Actually sitting on a beach.
This is why I should have gone on vacation this year. That's a brilliant idea, and I fully intend on stealing it.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
Recorded at the WREK studios on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia.
Those institutions support these views?
Probably not.
But they might.
If they were drinking.